Thanks, Tim, and thanks for having me here. When Tim first invited me and seeing the other speakers, I really thought it'd be better just for me to listen, because much of the stuff I utilize comes from you all. So I figured, well, I could at least bring kind of a donor perspective about why we're interested in using different frameworks, harmonizing the outcomes of the research that we invest in, and so on. So I changed the title of the talk slightly, essentially assessing the performance of our research and development efforts with sustainable intensification as a question. Now, I'm the program leader for sustainable intensification, so I'm well committed. But, you know, one of the challenges I face from folks is, you know, how do you put all that together and take into consideration the multiple objectives that sustainable intensification is supposed to embrace? So today I'll just talk through. I seldom, if ever, do a full text talk, but today I will. But I'll just talk through some of the considerations that went into our thinking at USAID around the concept of sustainable intensification, the drive to develop or utilize some type of assessment framework across our programs, and then the sort of timeline for that development and who's involved and what it does. Hopefully my sort of rambling talk will provide some points of discussion for the later roundtable. But first, the problem that we find is that, you know, we do invest in a lot of different types of research and development projects. I'm in the research division, so my research projects cover Asia and sub-Saharan Africa, some smaller projects in Central America, but quite diverse, from horticulture to tree crops, integrated crop livestock systems, all under the sort of umbrella of sustainable intensification, where we're attempting to identify viable paths out of poverty, malnutrition, that hit on multiple objectives. And of course, we're not the only group doing this. Gates Foundation, DFID, the Australian International Ag Research Center, and you know, this is a similar problem. What's the common framework? You know, just take one example, conservation agriculture, that has been so heavily invested in by USAID on the basis that it helps improve soil fertility and sometimes productivity. But yet, where are the other indicators on nutrition or gender empowerment? Often coming from different studies. How do you put all that together? So this was very much a problem, and it was seen widely. All these same questions that you can imagine come out of it. Often donor organizations are very conservative in their funding. It's much easier to sell the idea of developing and scaling out a single item, a single sprocket, like improved maize, because you can really easily measure it. Well, you can more easily measure the impacts over time. Something like with a systems approach, a package, a set of innovations, it's much more difficult because there are these trade-offs oftentimes that are difficult to assess. And then, of course, you get into the whole issue of measuring something like sustainability or measuring intensification across projects and so on. Tim also asked me to maybe delve into some of the different terms that have been thrown around and why did we settle on sustainable intensification. Frankly, I love the term agroecological intensification. I really like the term ecological intensification. And I'm equally enamored of sustainable intensification. There are others out there. I always liked sustainable agriculture. I didn't really have a problem with that. Now, interestingly enough, there are different groups supporting each one. So some groups identify different meanings for each one of those terms, And there are groups within there that identify different definitions for each term. Just as one example, ecological intensification. The most highly cited paper by Ken Kassman is more the, you know, just boost productivity, intensify that productivity per unit land area, and that's largely ecological intensification. I think that largely differs from the worldview of others. I don't know if the Doré and others disagree with that, but many other definitions really focus more on the sort of biological systems or ecological systems rather than just pure productivity boosting. So even within each term, you know, you get these different perspectives, which is fine. I don't mind that. One paper I really enjoyed by Peterson and Sig Snap, I saw, there's Sig Snap over there. They very cleverly did a survey at a professional conference asking people about these different terms, people's perceptions of those different terms. It's a very interesting paper to read. I think in general you guys were kind of favoring ecological intensification. But one thing that did stick out is one respondent did say that for all the shortcomings of sustainable intensification, it does get agronomists to think about ecology and gets ecologists to start thinking about social and economic aspects. So, you know, I think that's a one good positive thing. If all those terms push people to think about these multiple dimensions, I'm good with it. We're sticking with sustainable intensification at USAID, at least for now. But for my own point, I'm fine with all of them. So anyway, back to the problem of measuring and harmonizing. And really a concrete example is, let's say an NGO has a beautiful silver bullet package of management practices that they want to push. And, you know, we get this. We hear this from quite a few times. How do we make our decision about investing in that if one NGO is pushing the soil health benefits, another innovation is very good at productivity? How do we put it together? Well, in 2013, several of us met in Accra. The participating groups are there. And we just sort of started outlining some of the issues that we faced in harmonizing our different research projects and comparing across projects, across scales, and making more informed and harmonized decisions about our investments. So we started out with something very simple. What are the different things that we're interested in? And we came out with these five domains. And then we just very simply added to it, you know, how would we do that? Well, system A, maybe typical farmer practice. And then we could look at that. That would be one point of comparison. We wanted something that would work for us on the time scale of a research project, 5 to 10 years. So we couldn't, we wanted something flexible enough that we didn't need for it to play out over a 20-year period over population scales, but something that we could use to make some investment decisions based on relatively short time frames, but on a range of spatial scales. Anyway, pretty straightforward, very easy so far. I don't think, you know, that's pretty easy. We wanted to move forward, though, so that we could develop something that would work for multiple projects, and again, primarily focused on the developing world context. But something flexible enough that projects didn't have to start with designing their project around this framework. Something that was maybe that could be laid over existing projects. Data could be pulled in from old projects. Modeling data could be pulled in and so on. So in Tanzania in 2014, we brought in more of the implementing partners from a range of projects, including Millennium Villages, some of the work by the Gates Foundation in Simlessa, and of course our USAID-funded projects. Sir Gordon Conway was there to sort of provide a historical basis for the development of other frameworks and just to inform it. And out of that, we kind of came up with principles that we all agreed to. And I think the caveats were the most important. We didn't want to define or quantify sustainability. We really, our goal is to make decisions that at least ensure to some level of confidence that we're making better decisions, and we don't need to address the idea of ultimate sustainability, whatever that would mean. And it's outcome-based. We didn't want to be prescriptive about what is in and what is out, but really focus on the outcomes. And of course, in a development agency, we identify specific outcomes that we're shooting for. For example, in our current Feed the Future phase, we're focused on resilience, reducing undernutrition, and reducing hunger. So, you know, then that helps determine the kinds of outcomes that you're looking for. And also, like most assessment frameworks, we wanted it to be simple enough, so reducing the number of indicators sufficiently to where many different projects could use it, whether they're already underway or not, but be sufficient to be robust and relevant. Again, this is pretty standard stuff, but to bring together a group of, say, 100 people working on different projects and each one approaching this from different angles, it's surprisingly contentious and difficult to get consensus. So really, the main outcomes of these meetings was consensus around these. We went on to develop just, you know, what are those five domains, and then what are the most relevant scales at which most of these research projects work at that would be relevant for our purposes. So develop those domains and those relevant scales, largely called it a day then. Because that took a couple of days to get to, actually. That was followed up by a much larger meeting in San Jose in 2015, where we actually brought in a greater range of partners, including NGOs, other government agencies, and more implementing partners. So it's a very inclusive process. At that meeting, people did largely agree that something was needed that was a bit simpler than most existing assessment frameworks, something that could be that could draw from existing data from projects going on already, that projects wouldn't have to start up brand new with a whole new set of indicators. And so again, it was that focus on getting consensus and buy-in from the widest group of partners so that, you know, we could ultimately apply this over the largest number of projects. What we identified there, though, is it wasn't just going to happen by people volunteering their time and working on it. Everyone was keen to do this, but at that time, Vara Prasad, the director of Kansas State University's Sustainable Intensification Innovation Lab, was preparing a series of sub-awards for their work, and so Vara stepped up and said that this would be key to them moving forward, so volunteered to support that through a sub-award with Sig and Cheryl and Mark and Phil really focusing their efforts to put this together, including, you know, trainings and tools and so on. So over the next couple of years, they went out and field tested this with multiple projects in many different places, and we began applying it in one of our USAID-funded projects, Africa Rising. The SI Innovation Lab is applying it widely across their projects, and it's even been used to assess projects that have been going on. So there's quite a group of quite a body of data now. I'm just going to show one result. This is actually from Sig's work. I took off the treatments so that I wouldn't have to explain them. But what's that? But it's just illustrative, you know, of the types of comparisons that we can look at. We can look at trade-offs within a domain, trade-offs between treatments, and then begin making decisions about, would we go forward with this? If our main objective is to, increase soil carbon, for example, you could quickly look at a couple of options that aren't really viable. Or, alternative, if you like those other options, but they weren't adequately improving soil carbon, you can look at ways to other interventions to boost those in the other treatments. So again, like on if gender is an important factor in assessing the performance, and women don't seem to prefer a certain treatment, you can go back in, determine why they don't prefer that, and maybe have some other interventions that might make it more attractive to them, and then you get the full benefit. So it's not just about determining trade-offs, but it's identifying solutions to some of those negative trade-offs. So there will be others today that go into this in much more detail. And so really, I'm going to leave it at the, Santiago provided a lot more detail, similar type of a framework, similar type of assessment, but with a lot more detail. Others will provide more detail on this specific framework, so I'll leave it at that. I will just say, though, Tim did ask me to put my thoughts on, is sustainable intensification as a concept applicable to more developed countries, the United States, for example, and is it that robust, or does it need, I think he said sustainable de-intensification could be, but I think it is applicable as a concept, maybe less so. I think a critical thing there would be a shift in focus of intensification meaning, and probably more of an emphasis on sustainability depending on what that is. But just for example, this is a satellite image of the American Corn Belt in April. Plenty of sunlight, soil's warm enough to promote plant growth. This is not a very intensified system. Of course, most of us think that the Corn Belt, the maize soybean system is extremely intensive. But in terms of ecological intensification, it's not very. You get huge flushes of nitrogen out of that system, large soil erosion events. So that system, in some ways, could be intensified more, but just differently than industrial intensification. So it depends on the meaning of that word intensification and what direction that goes. I think Santiago hit on this. Different social and human condition indicators would likely be needed. In sub-Saharan Africa, we often deal with, caloric sufficiency, nutritional sufficiency or security, things like that. That wouldn't be as much of an issue, but there may be some other social and human condition parameters to consider. But ultimately, it goes back to what we were working on decades ago, and that very simple statement: to be sustainable, any farm must meet four goals, productivity, environmental soundness, financial viability, and social responsibility. That's essentially sustainable intensification, sustainable agriculture, what have you. And a dear colleague of mine, John Reginald, and his student did measure that for conventional and organic systems. So people have done it. I think you can debate its use, its relevance, and so on, but certainly it is done. And me personally, I feel like the concept is much more relevant and applicable in the developing world context, where people really are living on the edge of survival. And the choices that we make for investment have big impact. And that's why it's so critical that we develop some relevant, robust framework to assess whether our investments are performing like we want to across these multiple objectives. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry. I think we have time for one or two questions before we shift to the next speaker. Does anybody have any burning questions they'd like to pose?
Thanks, Jerry, for your interesting insights on how you work and your organization works. My question refers to the evaluation of your funding. How do you do this evaluation, whether or not
Yeah, well, there are several levels, and I'll just go down to the level of my program. It's difficult. We bring in outside evaluators, and they somehow look at impacts, numbers of people, hectares of land, and then go through the reports on what was measured. Did it really have this impact? Is it ready for scaling up? You know, in terms of research, you can have high impact on an individual household, but if it doesn't have widespread impact, it's not very useful. Alternatively, you could have a little bit of impact on each household, but on millions of people, and still not make much of a difference. So you're going for depth of impact and breadth of impact for transformation. So trying to tease that out. Well, it's not very easy when you have these projects, each project measuring different things in different ways and claiming, oh yes, it's sustainable intensification. Conservation agriculture is sustainable intensification. Organic agriculture is sustainable intensification. But everybody's measuring different things. Well, that's very difficult to evaluate. So I'm hoping to improve that greatly and to use this as some way to evaluate where our investments go in the future.
I can fully understand that, and I can particularly see that for the intensification part, you will see relatively fast success and impact.
Yeah.
But for the sustainability part, that's quite a different, let's say, time lag sometimes, which may not come out within the period that you consider for evaluation.
Yeah.
It could, and
yes, we've discussed that a lot. There are some indicators of sustainability that we can get in there, and I mean we do often fund 10-year projects. I somewhat agree with that, but we can look at variability, we can look at risk, we can look at food security indicators. Things like that, and through modeling, we can look at the direction that maybe soil carbon is going. So it's a tough thing, but you know, we didn't want to be stopped by the challenge of the sustainability issue.